where entrepreneurs come to grow. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
And now we're on to our featured guest, Thomas P. Farley. He's better known as Mr. Manners, and he says professionals are unknowingly sabotaging their success with small everyday behaviors. So welcome to the show. How did you get into the manners business?
Well, I tell people, for starters, it was 16 years of Catholic school and wearing a necktie for most of those 16 years. That's what put me on the path. But truly, it was my time. I was an editor for Town & Country magazine, where I had a column called Social Graces. And the column looked at everyday interactions with an etiquette or manners-related spin. And the column proved so successful that it ultimately became an anthology. And the anthology, when it came out, led to lots of television appearances. And from there, producers started to say, gosh, you're a regular Mr. Manners, aren't you? And it just kind of exploded. And so I left the world of publishing, as the world of publishing was really, print publishing in particular, was falling apart. And decided that it was time to hang my own shingle. And so I now, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but I work with corporations on all aspects of putting your best foot forward in every interaction.
So how do you deal with somebody who has bad manners? Somebody has an annoying habit, for example, maybe in the workplace. On the one hand, you're sort of taking a personal risk by addressing it. But on the other hand, everybody else is having to put up with it. How do you get over that? Or should you get over that? I mean, when is it okay to let it pass? And when is it okay to address it?
So this is a terrific question, and it's going to depend a lot on what is the relationship, the existing relationship that the two of you have. Is this a vendor who comes into the office once a year where you really don't have that much interaction with them at all? Is this somebody who works for you? Is this someone that you work for? I think truly it starts as a baseline with setting the standard, setting the example yourself. So don't expect others to behave well if you are committing the same misbehaviors that you think this other person is guilty of. And I see that a lot. People will complain and complain about the bad etiquette of others, and yet they're doing the same thing themselves. So we need to set the example.
So I want to ask you if this is a good definition. This is what my mother used to say. She used to say, manners are about how you make other people feel. Do you agree with that?
I do. So etiquette as a word, I think, has a really unfortunate reputation. People think of etiquette and they think, okay, so were we taking a time machine back to the Victorian era?
Yeah, it's like lifting your pinky when you drink tea, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's etiquette.
Yeah, well, so, and there's, I don't know if we have
and
time.
And I don't do that, by the way.
I'm glad to hear, because that's showy etiquette, but it's incorrect etiquette now. So the reason for that, why did people stick their pinky out? It was to counterbalance the delicate weight of porcelain when porcelain was hugely expensive. And so as you're drinking your tea, you would stick out your pinky, not to look snobby, but to help balance the teacup as you were drinking it in case you dropped it and, heaven forbid, you broke the teacup. Now, teacups are not that expensive and there's no reason to do that. In fact, it's an affectation. But etiquette, frankly, it's those sorts of things, like sticking your pinky out, that people think of when they think of etiquette. When in reality, true etiquette evolves. It's there to make others feel comfortable in uncomfortable situations. So if you think about the pandemic, none of us living had ever gone through a pandemic before. But etiquette needed to step up and say, this is the way we can still be a civilized society interacting with each other without everything falling to chaos. So etiquette is designed to evolve. It's not forged in bronze by Queen Victoria. It is there to change, adapt as conditions demand, so that, yes, Elizabeth, we can make others feel comfortable when they're around us, not less.
That's great. So where are we missing the target nowadays in terms of manners as a society? What do you think are some of the trends that you find disturbing?
One of the biggest things I'm seeing, and we all see it all around us, is that people are living in a bubble. You are out in public, and yet you're acting as though you're at home in private. So whether that's how you dress, whether that's how you carry on your conversations, whether that's how you engage with your media, your music, your videos, your FaceTime calls on the street or on the bus or on an airplane, things that we really should be reserving for private individual time, we're doing out in public, which has a twofold negative impact. Number one, it means you're distracting and disturbing the others around you, but it also means you're not engaging with the people who are out there. You're not seeing the broad world.
Yeah, I think I saw you on a segment for CBS. Before the interview, everybody put their phones in the middle of the table, right?
Yes.
So that, and I mean, it was sort of a gesture, because obviously nobody would look at their phone during a TV interview, sure. But or maybe they would. I don't know. I think that was really interesting.
So if you're going to meet a sales prospect, say, somebody that you really want to sell to for the first time, are there do's and don'ts in manners?
Very much so. So think about you are in someone's space. You are a guest in their office, just as you would be a guest in someone's home. So you want to think about, first of all, that first 7 seconds. We have 7 seconds to make a first impression. So how are you dressed? How are you addressing them? Are you remembering their name? Are you greeting them with a smile? Are you looking closed off? How are you exchanging a business card? So all of these things that happen in the initial moments of a conversation, these are critical for showing that we care and that we've shown up with our A game. So if you want a lasting relationship, be it a business one or a personal one, those first impressions are truly critical. So on a sales call, this is all very important. And I would further say, make sure you've done your homework before you show up and don't say, so tell me about you or tell me about, so what do you guys do again? I mean, if you're that blank-minded about what this operation is, you're really wasting their time. So as much ground research you can do before about them and their organization, the better.
I think that's great. You know, now we have LinkedIn, for example, and websites. And so it is easy to at least take a quick glance.
And ChatGPT.
And ChatGPT as well.
I asked ChatGPT this morning, are there any really good questions I should ask Thomas?
Oh, I can't wait. Did ChatGPT also have the answers? Maybe send them my way.
Yeah, you wouldn't even have to come into the studio, right? Yes. Yeah, we could have done the whole thing.
Well, what's the biggest faux pas you've ever seen someone do?
Oh, you know, I wasn't expecting this question, but I've got a very ready answer for you. So there is a family that's very well known for doing restaurant guides across the United States, and the paternoster of that organization was walking around a cocktail reception, and the server came along with a big plate of dip, and this gentleman took his fingers and he dipped them into the dip and licked his fingers right in front of everyone. And it was shocking to me. I mean, this is someone who knows restaurants. You know, this is his world. And the fact that he would do that, and it was such a turnoff. The server didn't know what to do. She did an about face and marched right back into the kitchen to change out her bowl.
Well, I've got a story. I don't know. Noah may edit it out of this, but yeah, I was going to say, too. When I was working for a big company, we had an older member of the team that had a flatulence problem. Mm-hmm. And this was before like video conferencing, right? So we were all in these conference room and, you know, it would get kind of stuffy in there. And so, you know, management nominated me to go talk to the guy and straighten this out. And it was probably one of the most embarrassing situations that because I had no idea what to say.
Sure.
But he took it like a real trooper, and he was a team player. And he went to the doctor and he got some medication, which helped. And the problem was resolved. But it was like very difficult. I mean, I lost sleep over this for a week before I went and talked with him because I didn't know how to handle this at all. But ultimately, it turned out okay.
So what would you have done, Thomas?
That would not have been a conversation I would have relished either. I applaud you for having the bravery to do it, even after a week's prep time. You know, I think the simple fact is, and Elizabeth and I were talking about this earlier, you have to think about, would you like to know if it was you who was the offender? Would you not want to know, or would you want everybody secretly talking, whether it's body odor, whether it's, you know, a perfume that's overpowering. I mean, they're revolted, you know, whether it's a sense of smell or anything else that's offensive. I think most of us who are considerate individuals would want to know. So it's about tact and approaching it in a way that doesn't feel like you're putting them on the spot in a negative or mean way, but kind of weaving in there somewhere, I'm sharing this with you because I know if it were me, I would want somebody to tell you. It's not easy to share this. However, I'm sharing it because. And I think if it comes from a place of compassion and not scorn or ridicule, I think they ultimately will come to appreciate it.
But I was at a conference, a business conference, and there was a woman and she was walking with a group of men. And her name tag, she was wearing a dark suit, and her name tag was a white name tag, was traveling down or had traveled down her body and was about to travel to someplace. Pretty embarrassing. People looked at it there. So I told her, I said, it looks like your name tag is coming loose or something. I forget, just real briefly. And she was like, But I asked Thomas, should I have done that? I didn't know her. Should I have done that?
And as we discussed, I think you did the absolute right thing. I think you didn't, you know, you couched it so beautifully. You know, I think you might want to adjust your name tag, or I think your name tag might have fallen. Yeah. I think that was a far better way of saying it than, you know, the alternative, shall we say. Yeah. I like the fact that you as a woman spoke to another woman. I think it would have been awkward for a man to do so.
The men around her would never have told her. I mean, you can't these days, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
It's ultimately comes down to put yourself in their position. Would you not rather know? And I think the answer for most of us would be, I mean, maybe she was doing it intentionally.
No, I doubt it.
But if she was, then she could let it stand. But I think she was probably very appreciative. And who knows, maybe you found a new friend because you had the courage and the kindness to point it out in a very gentle way.
Now, if it had been a man, there's no way going there.
No, for sure.
What kind of manners are we teaching our kids nowadays? Do you think that our kids are well-mannered or less mannered?
So this is an interesting question, too, because I think there's this perception, kids today, right? And then fill in the blank. You know, back in my day, we knew how to do X, Y, Z. And you can actually read very similar commentary by Revolutionary War era parents about their children who they thought were ill-behaved and didn't know manners and didn't know. So this is not a new phenomenon that young people disregard their manners at times. I think what is different for this time that we're living in, and it's only accelerating and it's not going to get better, is the technology. So we can insult each other without seeing each other face to face. We can do so with great rapidity. We can make errors with great rapidity that are very difficult to claw back. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of parents are not really setting the example for their children. They don't want their children on the phone, but then you're watching the family at the table or in a restaurant, and the entire family are on their phone.
I've seen that. Yeah. I've seen that, yeah.
So don't, you know, lash out against your children for being slaves to their devices when the parents are doing the same. It really should begin at home. I applaud that when it happens. But I will tell you, the executives I work with and the young professionals I work with, something happened where that day of lessons at home just simply did not occur because they've made it into the workforce and they don't know how to sit down to a business meal. They don't know how to hold a fork. They don't know how to say thank you. They don't know how to compose a considerate email. So I think as a culture, I think even those who do know better are often letting their standards drop, which I think is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. When was the last time anyone wrote a thank you card, for example? You know, now it's a thank you text, you know, yeah. THX, you know, yeah. THX for dinner, you know, and then, you know, consider that done. I think that's really unfortunate. So it's not just children, but children, of course, are as tech savvy as each new generation always is. And they're using the devices to connect with each other. But there's a whole lot of disconnection, especially as we hear with Gen Alpha and Gen Z.
So you told me you're flying around the country and summer's a really tough time because they're onboarding new young executives at these companies. What's one of the first things you tell them?
We talk about the importance of this, that if you think etiquette is something that only your grandmother should consider, or, you know, if you think that you're going to sit down in my class with Mr. Manners and that we're going to put a book on everyone's head and have you walk in a straight line.
The rain in Spain. Like,
yes.
It's mainly in the plane.
That's right. This is not My Fair Lady Revisited. This is really about practical skills that will give you better interactions both in a workplace and in a professional. I say the skills we learn today will help you at the office. They'll help you get promoted. They'll help you get noticed. But they're also going to help you in your family relationships. They're going to help you in your dating relationships. Being a considerate person holistically makes you that much more enjoyable to be around and someone who flourishes. And so if you feel like, oh, this sounds like ancient advice that I don't need, the fact is it's relevant, it's contemporary, it changes with the times, with AI and with social media, but it's still as vital as it has ever been, if not more so.
We're in New York right now. When is it okay to be rude?
Well, you know, this brings me back to you asked earlier, you know, at what point is it okay to not abide someone's bad behavior? So I think if you see someone being disrespected, I think it's time for you to step in on their behalf if they're not defending themselves. I also say having good manners doesn't mean that you're a doormat. So letting someone abuse you emotionally, being a horrible, mean boss at work, having good manners doesn't mean you just sit there and you take it. You do stand up for yourself and you do so in a forthright way. You don't get angry, but in a confident way. So I think for New Yorkers, and I'm a longtime New Yorker, we see a lot of misbehavior. But I will tell you, New Yorkers have this horrible reputation as being awfully rude. There was a study that was done a couple of years ago. They called it the drop test, where they had a case study person stand in front of a Starbucks and drop an enormous sheaf of papers right in front of the door as they were entering to see who would stop to pick up the papers that they had just dropped. And of all the cities around the globe that they did, in Bangkok and London and so on, guess where they had the most people helping picking up the papers? It was New York City. So the thing about New York, I always say, is be quick. New Yorkers are willing to help and love to help. But if you ask for too much of their time, they're rushing off somewhere. That's the key.
I sometimes think the New Yorkers get a reputation as being grumpy because they don't get enough sleep. It's a loud city.
True. Very true.
And a lot of the apartments don't have the best sound insulation. So that could contribute to it, too.
Do you give advice if somebody comes in and they just can't get along with anybody else, or the super arrogant person? Like a lot of these young people coming out of school are very arrogant. What do you tell them?
I do a program actually called Dealing with Difficult People. So it's not really for the difficult person on how to not be
sign
difficult.
Up? I mean, do the difficult people sign
yeah,
up?
Yeah, they're the ones who really need it. You know, the fact is, difficult people are all around us, you know, whether at the store, at the office, and sometimes in our families, unfortunately. I think it's really critical that we, as the person who's trying to be the best version of ourselves, we don't stoop to their level, but we tweak our language, we tweak our approach in a way that allows us to get better results from that interaction. And hopefully, if they see that enough, they start emulating it. Now, if it's someone who reports to you and they're surly, or then of course you want to have a word with them. But I would choose those conversations carefully. You know, they've taken a lifetime to build those characteristics, and it's unlikely that they're going to transform overnight. But I think the best we can do is be the best version of ourselves, even when we sometimes feel like we're being pushed to our own limits.
Well, we have to take a break. We're with Thomas P. Farley, Mr. Manners, and we're having a great time and learning a lot more of Passage to Profit right after this.
Do you hear that? That's the sound of uncertainty lurking under your hood. You know the feeling. I know I do. That sudden sinking sensation when you see a check engine light or your car unexpectedly breaks down and you're faced with sky-high repair bills. It's time to shield against unexpected repairs with CarShield. CarShield is America's most trusted auto protection company and has an A rating with the Better Business Bureau. Don't let the fear of a breakdown keep you up at night. Trust the Shield, CarShield, and say goodbye to terrifying repair bills and hello to peace of mind. Your plan also comes with 24/7 roadside assistance, courtesy towing, rental car options, and so much more. Don't wait till it's too late. Call CarShield now before a breakdown. Protect your wallet. Protect your car with CarShield. Get our best protection ever. Call now. You'll thank me later.
800-261-2176. 800-261-2176. That's 800-261-2176.
Have you outgrown your health insurance plan or just not happy with what you're paying for? The number one reason we all change our health insurance is price. Are you paying too much for your health insurance? Would you like to have better coverage at a better rate or at little or no cost to you? Your life needs are always changing, but have you done anything to improve your health insurance for you and your family? Health insurance laws and coverage are always changing and getting better. It's impossible to do all the research yourself, but now it's all done for you for free. So regardless of your age or medical condition, take a few minutes right now and find out if you can save money or even qualify for zero cost health insurance in your state. Call now.
Paid for by Cheaper Health Insurance. 800-652-1470. 800-652-1470. 800-652-1470. That's 800-652-1470.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
We're here with Thomas P. Farley, Mr. Manners. I wanted to ask you about networking, because a lot of our entrepreneurs now are doing networking. It's a great way to meet people and make connections. Any thoughts about how to be an effective networker?
Yes, I love this question. So one of the workshops I do teach is called Working the Room. And I find that we have less and less opportunities to interact with other professionals because hybrid work space environments where we're not in the office as much, happy hours as the younger generation is not going out to drink nearly as much as the first generation where drinking is down. So a lot of these socialization, these corporate type events, conferences, conventions, they really are the one and only opportunity you may have to make lasting business connections. So it's really critical that you show up with the best version of yourself. Now, not everyone can be an extrovert, and that's okay. I think really it's critical that you don't immediately break out your device and stand against the wall because you feel like you're uncomfortable around others. I recommend going with an outfit that makes you feel great. You know some key people that you want to have a conversation with. You've researched them. You know their names. You know what they look like, so you can find them in the room. I recommend no more than 7 minutes per interaction. So not that you have to take all 7 minutes, but if you meet someone you like and you talk for 45 minutes with that one person in a crowded room, you're missing an opportunity on connecting with a whole lot of other individuals in that room. And then lastly, especially if you feel like you're a little bit shy, I recommend going with what I call a pocket story. So something kind of fun and interesting and quirky. You're going to stay away from weather because, I'm sorry, weather's one of those boring small talk topics. If you walk in and say, you know, gosh, it's not the heat, it's the humidity, right? Oh, please, you know.
How about them Mets, you know?
Yes, yeah, how about those Mets? Exactly. Yeah, they definitely won't want to go there so far.
I will say Richard had a conversation with an Uber driver for 45 minutes about windshield wipers.
I love that. I love that. It's possible, but in a room, of course, where you're networking with people.
Yeah.
If you've taken 7 solid minutes, had a great interaction, and again, you've come with that pocket story, something quirky. There are a couple of websites I recommend in my workshops where you can find these interesting out there stories. The key is to figure out how to weave it in naturally to a conversation and not make it seem like it's coming out of nowhere. That's critical. But that's my favorite thing to do. And then lastly, and this is where a lot of people do drop the ball, you've spent all this time being yourself, making a great impression. Maybe you exchange business cards and then you never follow up. Mm. You don't send them an email. You don't reconnect with them. The business card, if you even got one, if you even had one, winds up in a drawer somewhere or in your wallet folded. By the time you look at it again, you've forgotten who this person was or where you met them. So a next day connect, I think, is really terrific.
So do you only do corporate workshops? Can a normal person who's not affiliated with anything but wants to help their career take a workshop from you?
So I don't offer typically private individual sessions. I will occasionally be asked. In fact, I have one right now that I'm planning for a family in Westchester County, New York, who wants a dining etiquette program for them and their extended family. And they're paying more or less corporate rates for it. But I don't have open enrollment programs. I will do personal coaching for professionals who are looking for that. But I would say my typical client is a corporation. Sometimes it's an offsite retreat they're doing and they want a speaker for half a day or even a convention speaker, keynote speech. So it's them and then universities as well, but not so much the private individuals. That's a totally different market.
So Thomas, what experience did you have as a child that put you where you are today?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I think the Catholic school upbringing, I was semi-joking about that, but the reality is I had throughout grammar school, I had the Sisters of Charity who, you know, this was past the era where they'd hit you with a ruler, but they were very strict. And you
must be younger than I am, then, because I got the crap beat out of me by the nuns.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. Priest, too.
Wow. Oh, that's not good. Yeah.
And I was little. They didn't care.
They were strict. They were strict. Yeah. You know, there were certain words and phrases you would never dream of saying. And, you know, we took our hats off when we walked back into, you know, after playing on the playground. The hat came immediately off. Your tie had to be fully. So those little things, you know, they may seem like not a lot. I grew up as well in a family with lots of teachers who were. My mom was a school teacher, had aunts who were teachers. So I think that was really critical. And it was something, honestly, I don't know that I ever expected to be doing it professionally until I got to Town & Country magazine and had the Social Graces column. And wound up doing the book. And I really thought there is a need here. And I felt so privileged to be able to have a platform to speak about all of these issues that we've been talking about in a way that was not stuffy. And that was really, you know, people think of etiquette and they think of some granny with half glasses and a bun, you know, maybe a nun, you know, tisking everyone in the room. And I thought, what this is really about. And if I can make it something, or that you have to be British, if you're going to teach manners, you must be British. I don't think any of that is necessary. And that seems to be borne out. You know, corporate America is very frightened of the word etiquette. They think it's going to be the book balancing class. Mm-hmm. And once we get talking and when they realize it's everything but, then they're more open to it.
So Thomas, how did you take something so niche and get on TV all over the place. Like, how did you turn this into a media career, too?
My dream when I was a child was not to be an etiquette person, but it was to be a TV person. I had book reports of me in the third and fourth grade where I had little hand-drawn illustrations of me with a microphone. And it was actually, funny enough, all the NBC and Today Show work that I continue to do, it was an NBC mic flag, me reporting from WNBC. So I was always captivated by television as a medium. This environment where we're all sitting now feels very comfortable for me. I was a disc jockey at Fordham, where I went to school at WFUV, which is a big 50,000-watt transmitter radio station. So I was there, and but ultimately landed in print publishing, which sadly, as we all know, has just been evaporating before our eyes. And I thought, I've built up a phenomenal amount of credibility in a space that I'm now extremely passionate about. I see the need. I see the interest. As the book came out, producers started booking me, and I think they were relieved to see someone who wasn't that stereotypical etiquette person and could address whether it was technology, that cell phone stack that you were talking about earlier that was on CBS, where we put our cell phones in the middle of the table as an exercise. So immediately they saw that it could be fun. And by now we've done little shows. I did one on NBC for Valentine's Day where we had hearts, you know, little kind of conversations, hearts on paddles, where I'd present a scenario and the host would say whether it was like a love connection or not based on the etiquette interaction. So it's, I think, really about making it fun, making it accessible, knowing what the needs of the audience are and adapting accordingly.
Well, and you have an amazing look. So go to YouTube. I'm not kidding. His hair is like everybody would kill for his hair. He's got this head of curly, gorgeous hair.
Oh, thank you.
And
thank you,
that's part of your personal brand, right?
It's, well, you're right. Thank you. And I appreciate that. I mean, let me tell you, when you have curly hair, and anybody who does, they know the struggle. It's real. It has its days and its bad days. But it has become part of my brand. I've embraced it. And I'll tell you, anytime I do get a shorter haircut, my business cards that have an avatar of me with the curly hair, they look at it and they say, who's this? Why do you have this curly haired person on your business card? So unless I change my business cards, I guess I'm keeping the curls.
Yeah.
So Thomas, where can people find you?
So I recently launched relaunched my YouTube channel. So every Monday I do a segment called Mr. Manners Mondays. So that's on YouTube and that's on Substack. And I'm really enjoying Substack as a platform. It's, I think, for anybody looking to build their brand, looking to build their business, it's just a terrific, seamless, clean platform. The website is Mr. Spelled Out Manners.com. And I'm on all social media with the same handle, Mr. Spelled Out Manners on Instagram and so on.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I feel like I've learned a lot. And I'm ready to go back into the world with better manners than when I came. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to the podcast and leave a quick review. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and X, and subscribe to our YouTube channel for bonus content.
Learn more at PassageToProfitShow.com.